Hi, my name is Nina Prazaki. My voice is my passport. Verify me.
Hey, Nina, what's happened to you?
Have you never seen the movie Sneakers, Patrick?
Hi, my name is Werner Brandis. My voice is my passport. Verify me.
Robert Redford leads a team of hackers to steal a decoder for the National Security Agency, and they cobble together someone's voice to pass through the voice recognition security measure.
You're not the Nina Prazaki I know.
Fine. You got me, or really this is Nina's voice clone. She's not sure how to pronounce Nina's last name correctly. Prazaki or Prazaki. The Z always trips people up.
Yeah, that pesky Z, it always trips people up. Do you like my voice clone, Patrick?
No, it freaked me out.
Well, by the end of the podcast, you two are going to get to meet your voice clone.
The World in Words is made possible in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities.
This week on the podcast, computers speak.
Will you please make the voter say for our Eastern listeners, good evening, radio audience.
Pim Weizenbaum is Joe Weizenbaum's oldest daughter.
I'm not exactly sure how
to describe him.
No, how open and honest to be in this context, you know?
Her dad, Joe Weizenbaum, has been called the father of modern artificial intelligence.
Oh, he was a thinker. He thought a lot. He thought all the time.
He passed away nearly a decade ago. But during the 1960s, he was a computer science professor at MIT. He was also an early innovator in natural language processing. That's a fancy way of saying the interaction between computers and human languages.
We had a three-story house, and his study was in the basement, and he just listened to opera and was on his computer all the time. So who would want to be in there, you know? It was just only me.
Pim says she was his favorite. It was in that basement where Joe Weizenbaum dreamed up Eliza.
Can you tell me a little bit about the first time you heard about Eliza? What memories do you have of her?
Of her?
Can I call it her? Or the chatbot. Of the chatbot.
Eliza was the world's first chatbot.
I would not, as his daughter, I could not condone calling Eliza her. Sorry. Can't do it. That was an app. That was not
we'll
a...
We'll get to that. I want to talk about that, too.
Eliza is a computer program that anyone can converse with via the keyboard, and it'll reply on the screen.
And yes, Joe Weizenbaum, he named it after the more famous Eliza.
All right, Eliza, say it again.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
He also called it the doctor program because the computer, I mean, Eliza, was supposed to act out the role of a therapist.
Men are all alike.
In what way?
They're always bugging us about something or other.
Can you think of a specific example?
The computer's replies seem very understanding, but this program is merely triggered by certain phrases to come out with stock responses.
I was never one of those people who was fooled into thinking that this was a real doctor that, you know, could see into my intimate thoughts. It just was always so clearly just a shallow game that my dad was creating for his own reasons.
So Pim might not have been fooled, but her father's secretary sure was.
Back in the days when they had secretaries, I don't think professors have secretaries anymore. She had a typewriter, but Dad had the computer of the day back in his office behind her desk. And he would be fooling around with Eliza, and she finally asked if she could try it.
I asked her to my office and sat her down at the keyboard, and then she began to type. And of course, I looked over her shoulder to make sure that everything was operating properly. After two or three interchanges with the machine, she turned to me and she said, "Would you mind leaving the room, please?"
And shut the door. And he did, of course. I mean, who's going to not? But he was just flabbergasted.
You're like my father in some ways. You don't argue with me.
Why do you think I don't argue with you?
You're afraid of me.
You know, so that's one of the things we talked about at dinner that night. I think he pondered that for a while. I think it took him a few days of just letting that flit around in the back of his head before he started realizing, you know what? That is actually really weird.
Joe Weizenbaum's secretary became enthralled with Eliza, a computer program that merely texted back and forth with her. But what if Eliza could speak? Better yet, what if she sounded like your mother or your brother or you when you were a teenager?
If you are asking some people, like 2 or 3 years ago, whether this would be possible, maybe they would say, oof, no, I don't think, because, you know, 1 minute is really not enough data to create an artificial voice based on that.
This is Jose Sotelo. He's a co-founder of a company called Lyrebird, basically a computer program that synthesizes your voice with just 1 minute of recording.
Wait a minute. Lyrebird? As in not telling the truth, liar?
Yes, it's an unfortunate coincidence. But no, it's Lyrebird, L-Y-R-E, as in the Australian bird that can mimic other bird calls and all kinds of sounds the bird hears in the forest.
That was a camera shutter. And now a camera with a motor drive. And that's a car alarm.
The Lyrebird makes it sound easy, but it's not.
And for a long time, like, our results were really bad.
Jose Sotelo again.
Like how?
Oof, like muffling, like you would not even recognize the words.
The computer created voices that sounded sort of like human speech, but not any speech you could understand.
The bunny and churros had
the
hobby to let
the fire hydrant for woman. Yeah, like it sounded like a foreign language, like let's say, I don't know, a bit, like to me it sounds Korean, but it was supposed to be English, so it was definitely not working.
I don't know, to me it almost sounds like one of those things that was playing backwards.
Oh, like a record playing backwards?
Yeah.
But it definitely, you can kind of hear the human language in there.
Yeah, you can hear it in this garbled, in this super garbled way.
Yeah. So months and months later, one day Jose was at his computer running through the results, and it finally sounded human.
North Korea is a rogue nation which has become a great threat and embarrassment to China, which is trying to help, but with little success.
Wow, that is a big difference. Though, I got to say, the computer doesn't quite nail his pronunciation of China.
China, yeah, he really says that distinctly.
So what exactly is going on here?
Oh, Patrick, it's super complicated, and for all you techies out there, I'm probably going to get this wrong, but from what I understand, Jose and his co-founders built, you know, a set of algorithms, or what is called a neural network, and this neural network mines a bank of human voices to pick out the elements of sound that mimic the way that you sound. So the computer then puts all of these elements together, and voila, your voice is synthesized.
So when we think of how we describe a voice, we think of, you know, pitch and tone and volume, yeah, speed, all of those kinds, right, of things. Does the computer do it that way too?
That was my question exactly. And Jose told me he doesn't actually totally know.
You have no idea, like, what the computer is putting together to, like, create a voice.
Yeah, it's a bit of a black box. And, like, this is one of the challenges of this kind of algorithm. And this is a bit of, like, magic.
Magic?
Yeah, magic. Well, kind of magic, I guess. So they know what the computer is doing. Like, they know what they're asking the computer to do, but they don't know exactly how it's determining and matching the voice. So it's kind of like a black box. It's like you put in, you know what you're asking it to do, something happens in the black box, and then the answer comes out of the black box. And if you open the lid of the black box, all you're going to really see is a bunch of numbers. Like what the computer, how the computer is making all these connections. And if you really like dig into the numbers, you could figure out what those connections are, but they don't really need to do that. So another way of explaining it, does that make sense? I know, okay, so you're gonna say, so another way of explaining it, and this isn't a totally perfect analogy, but think about your own brain. And think about, say, you're learning a language, and you know you're learning a new word, and you're like ingesting the new word,
and you see it, you learn it, and then suddenly you know the new word at the end, but you don't know like what neuron is firing to like help you learn that word. You don't know what's going on inside your brain that makes you know that word. All you know is learning new word, I know new word. Does that make sense? No,
magic.
I see a skeptical.
Magic.
There's a bit of like of wonder, magic, awe, mystery. Like there's magic that we know something and we can learn something.
Okay, so the magic is the bit that we don't really need to know. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
I can accept that.
Okay, so Patrick, let's synthesize your voice.
Synthesize my voice? How does that happen?
Okay, so you need to go to www.lyrebird.ai.
.ai. Here we go. Ooh, AI. I like it already. Okay, I'm on it.
Okay, so register.
Oh, create your digital voice. Is that what I do?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not a robot. I had to check that.
Check the box. Are we sure? Are we sure?
Oh, we're just going
to...
I know what it's
going to
do.
You?
It's like later on, once I've created this synthesized voice, I think I'll have to check the box that says I am a robot.
So to synthesize your voice, you need about 1 minute of recording. And the computer is prompting Patrick with some just random sentences for him to read and record.
He felt a pang of loneliness and tried to ignore it. He brings her own lunch to work and eats by himself at his desk. Wait a minute, those are two completely unrelated sentences.
They're just like sentences they pulled from old books.
Oh, that's so unsatisfying.
I know.
I kind of wanted a story there, and we started in the...
Well, you have 28, 29 more that you have to do.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah, they're going to get progressively stranger.
I could have flipped the two sentences, and I think there might have been a narrative there.
Yeah.
So I tell you, this reminds me of like...
We're never going to get through this. Oh. You got to do 30 of these. So speech synthesis used to take hours upon hours of taping your voice or having tapes or collected of your voice. But the breakthrough that Jose and his team have made is that anyone can synthesize their voice with a very small minimum of 1 minute of audio, just 30 sentences.
At least she knows how to behave at funerals. Have you no idea who could have done it? Okay, there's a narrative there. Okay, I like that one. Okay, I'm validating that.
And the more monotone, actually, the better.
Okay, all right. Of course, the most important question... I can't do just monotone.
Okay, you just say it the way that you would say it.
Okay, I'm not validating that. I'm recording again. Okay. Of course, the most important question is whether it actually works better than the old eye tracker. Communism is the opposite of capitalism. Sometimes it's not the right thing to do the right thing. That's really deep.
Humans have been trying to synthesize speech for a very long time. Or at least they've been telling stories about speech synthesis. Stories like Tales of the Brazen Head. Have you heard of the Brazen Head, Patrick? Well, you know, it's like brass busts conjured by wizards to spout wisdom. So there was a medieval English philosopher, Roger Bacon, who supposedly created a mechanical talking head. And there's a story that he was so intent to get it to speak that he apparently asked the devil for advice on how to speak. So there are stories about automatons speaking, you know, since the medieval times. But more modern, well, frankly, more scientific efforts at speech synthesis date back to the 18th century. And then fast forward a couple of centuries. Meet the voter. V-O-D-E-R. It was created in Bell Laboratories by an acoustic engineer, Homer Dudley. The Voter debuted at the New York World's Fair in 1939. It was the first attempt to electronically replicate talking by breaking down speech into 20 different sounds.
For example, Helen, will you have the voters say, she saw me?
She saw me.
That sounded awfully flat. How about a little expression? Who saw you?
She saw me.
Whom did she see?
She saw me.
Well, did she see you or hear you?
She saw me.
The first computer speech synthesis programs began in the 1950s. And then in 1968, Bell Laboratories made headlines again by making a computer sing.
Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer to.
This song, of course, was made more famous by HAL 9000's demise, or I should say deactivation, in 2001 Space Odyssey.
Daisy. Your answer to. I'm half crazy, all for the love of you.
Oh, I've totally forgotten how sad that scene is.
I know, it's so, it kind of broke my heart when I watched it over again. It's emotional. Hal's dying voice. Voice is emotional. And this is actually something that Jose Sotelo at Lyrebird, he noticed.
Whenever we talked about this technology, what we receive is a really emotional response of people. People care a lot.
Why is this so emotional to people? What's so emotional about the human voice?
So this is difficult to say, but my answer to that question would be that we care a lot about our voice as part of our identity. So of course, like, you feel a really close connection with your identity, and really big part of this identity is your voice. And there are some people that lose their voices because of some disease, and we have spoken with some of them, and like, they really miss this part of themselves. And it's a bit like if you were going to feel incomplete because you lost some part of you.
One of the applications that Jose and his team are working on is being able to recreate voices. Like, if you never had one, you know, Stephen Hawking, or if you lose it to disease, remember Roger Ebert, or for any reason you can't use your voice.
Especially if you're dead.
This is Pete Ford. He's the founder of It's Me, a personal avatar company.
Did he just say dead?
Yeah.
Like saving the voices of the dead?
Yeah. And not just dead, Patrick. Imagine, if you will, talking with your 13-year-old self.
Ooh, I'd rather not.
The idea that we could potentially visit a version of ourselves or a version of the people we miss that sounds like them, looks like them, you know, you could probably have limited conversations with them. I mean, it's totally freaky. Don't get me wrong. It weirds me out.
It's a Black Mirror episode.
I can sign you up to something that helps. It will let you speak to him. I know he's dead, but it wouldn't work if he wasn't. And don't worry, it's not some crazy spiritual thing. He was a heavy user. He'd be perfect.
Please, shut up.
I mean, it's still in beta, but I've got an invite.
Please, shut up.
You won't even...
But you know what? It's one of these things that, like, I'm not the only person thinking about it, which means that it's, to some degree, it's some version of inevitable. And so I figure, let's... Instead of all freaking out and being weirded out, let's explore it, see what it means, and if we can use it for good instead of Black Mirror.
So Lyrebird is actually working on recreating the voice of one woman's future mother-in-law. So her fiance's mother passed away before their wedding, and she got in touch with Jose and their team to see if they could recreate her voice to say something at the wedding.
Okay, that's great. Totally benign.
Yeah, benign and sweet.
But you just don't tell me that this isn't going to be used in other much, much more nefarious ways, right? I mean, like, we're already dealing with all of this mistrust of the media,
right.
Fake news and all of this.
Yeah.
This is only going to muddy the waters further. People may use it to create further mistrust between...
The media and the population.
Or between people and truth.
Yeah. I mean, I had the same concerns, and I asked that same question to Pete, the It's Me avatar company guy.
Do I have fear? Yes, but it's more of that general anxiety that we've all been experiencing, I think. Look, I don't think that there's anything inherently evil about us being able to record how our voice could sound saying words that we haven't said yet. People were very upset about, you know, the advent of recorded audio in general. And everything seemed to have worked out okay. We like our podcasts.
Okay, he's totally sidestepping the issue here, right? I mean, there's nothing, of course there's nothing inherently evil about recording the human voice. I mean, that's not the issue. The issue is instances like, you know, Trump claiming not to be on the Access Hollywood tape. In the future, he might say it's a kind of Trump bot voice.
Right.
Or a false confession for a crime being concocted by the authorities.
Right. Well, okay, so it's not possible now yet, as you've heard. Like, it's not spot on. These voices sound really still mechanical. But you're right. These are, like, extreme concerns. And I spoke to Jose at Lyrebird about this because it's scary in this moment of, like, distrust of the media even. And he said to me, look, this technology is going to exist whether his company makes it or another company makes it. It is the march of the future. It is going to happen. But that does not mean that they haven't thought a lot about this as a company, and he hasn't thought about exactly what you're talking about, these false concocted confessions.
Like, to me, the most crazy thing is that right now someone could go to jail because of some recording saying, oh, yes, I did that crime. Yes, it's me that committed that crime.
I mean, so much stuff has happened because of recordings. I'm just thinking of Watergate, like, because of the recordings. That's sort of sealed the deal.
Definitely. I mean, there's so many really big consequences that could happen because of someone having something that sounds like an authentic recording of your voice.
At least I'm pleased that
he's thinking about it. Right. So incidentally, Joe Weizenbaum, you remember the father of AI and the chatbot Eliza that, right, you know, captivated his secretary. So after that incident with his secretary, he began to have his own concerns about the field that he was innovating.
He had been pretty high up in the clouds about the position of AI. But I think that moment shifted his thinking toward how this affects actual human beings and could have negative effects on people.
Again, his daughter, Pim Weizenbaum.
As his ideas developed over the years, he came more and more to see the ethical implications of removing the human and humanity from the equation.
Wow. So how did he proceed after that?
Well, he was pretty much down on the whole thing and really down on Eliza. He said at the end that he created her to try and prove his point that we can't have, like, authentic relationships with machines. But it kind of disproved his point in a certain sense because people did have attachments. Pim says he would have been horrified to see human reaction to social media today. And she actually said to see his grandchildren and the way that they interact with their phones.
So we've all got these phones in our hands now. I mean, what do we do?
What can you do? I spoke at length with Jose about this. And his solution, or what they've been coming to as a company, is educating people, especially about the deceitful nature of this technology. So today, we don't believe every photo that we see on Facebook, or at least we shouldn't believe every photo that we see on Facebook. We know that people can doctor up images. I mean, all of us doctor up images, you know, every day on Instagram. So we kind of understand the technology better as, like, a group. So tomorrow, perhaps, every voice will be suspect as well.
And one day, my voice might be as real as Nina's real voice.
Smith is the name on the marriage license. Oh, I'm done.
Oh, so what does it say?
That's so exciting.
What does it say now?
It says I could create my digital voice now.
Create your digital voice.
Okay, here we go. This is really scary. It has gleaned from these sentences to be my voice, and it's going to start. Yeah. It's going to actually start speaking to me.
No, it's not going to start speaking to you. It's sort of created a synthesis of what it feels like is your voice.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be able to type whatever you want into, like, a type box and make it say whatever in your voice. So what your first sentence will be is very telling. I mean, what are you going to make your digital voice say first?
Here we go.
I am super scared.
It does kind of sound like you.
That sounded like me?
Yeah. So that's
No,
but that's the thing, is what Jose says is that nobody thinks that their voice sounds like them, but everybody else thinks that it does. Type something longer. Say something longer.
Okay.
I do not believe that I sound like this, but Nina and Tina are ready to sub me for this bot voice.
Are ready to what? To this
bot voice? Shall I read the whole sentence?
Was it a bad word? Did you use a bad word?
I did not use a bad word.
Oh.
I do not believe that I sound like this, but Nina and Tina are ready to sub me for this bot voice.
I do not believe that I sound like this, but Nina and Tina are ready to sub me for this bot voice. That's all for this week. Thanks to engineer Tina Toby.
And thanks to everyone in the world's newsroom.
Hit us up on Twitter. We're @LingerPod.
And most importantly,
thanks so much for listening.